what's your story? Really, what's your story? As people of faith, we have always been given a story. And as people of faith, we often wander from that story. So what's your story? From the very beginning, what's the story? The story really was from God that you are a people who I have brought out of Egypt, saved you, and have given you freedom. That's your story. And what happens over the course of the entire Hebrew Scriptures is people keep forgetting the story. They wander from the story. And so right here in Deuteronomy, which you get the sense, Deuteronomy, these are not technical biblical scholarship words, but, you know, at the time of the putting Deuteronomy together, there was more organization going on, you know, within the faith community, I believe, and people understood that they needed to be able to tell that story and pass it on to the next generation and generations thereafter. So, you know, they had phylacteries. Phylacteries were these little leather pouches that you wore on your forehead and you strapped to your arms. Now, I spent 13 years in a very Jewish and Orthodox Jewish community in Ohio. And on Saturdays and other times of the week, you would see people, young people, in addition, after bar mitzvah, boys would wear these. And you would see them walking down the street on our major street, along with all the other kids who have their pants down low. And so you got low-down pants and phylacteries. You know, I mean, it's just like the greatest place. Wasn't it Gary? Gary passed there, too. So, you know, this was the way that people wanted to communicate their story, is that you kept it right on your forehead. I don't know, if you had a big thing on your head and strapped to your arm, might you remember to talk about it? You know, wouldn't you remember maybe to tell it to your children and your grandchildren? It was the means to tell the story. So, you know, here we have all kinds of means to tell the story today. From phylacteries to Facebook, from Teflon to Twitter. We have all kinds of means. So my guess is, whether this is part of the agenda or not, that many of you as communicators, perhaps around coffee or meals, you're going to talk about, oh, we still have to put out a print edition. Extra percentage of the people still need the print edition. The United Methodist Reporter's gone down, but we can't really do that much more about it. And we still have people who claim they don't use the internet or the computer. So we have this wide spectrum of how people receive the message. So you're going to spend some time, you know, talking about that. The templates that UMCOM has for websites that you can use. Of course, you all know that. We'll be encouraging your annual conferences to use that. That was just an unpaid public announcement. So, you're welcome. So, you know, we have all these means. And we've had various means, everything from phylacteries to Facebook, from Teflon to Twitter, over the generations, everything in between. But I hope that in the course of this meeting, you think also about the content. What is your story? Talk about how to communicate it. By all means, we rely on you to talk about how to communicate it. But please remember that we all need to remember and to think about what is our story as we tell it. So, you know, we've had all kinds of master narratives. You know, of course, the great master narrative is that of good news. We're people of good news. We're not people of despair and death. So throughout the last, I don't know, at least decade now, maybe not quite, we've had a lot of master narratives of death and doom. Does anybody remember the death tsunami? I mean, that was a pretty powerful master narrative that I hope has kind of ebbed away a little bit, because I'm not sure that the death tsunami, that we were all going to reach a certain age and then the church was just going to die, falling off the edge, as was promoted in many places. And there was some theological pushback to that, and rightly so, because our master narrative is not the death tsunami. All right. All right. You see, the tomb is empty. Yeah. If the tomb wasn't empty, we could talk about the death tsunami as our master narrative, but the tomb is not filled. We're people of the resurrection. We're people of the third day. So, we need to remember what our master narrative is. You know, I read one of Brian McLaren's latest books, and in it he talks about how, you know, we became, Christendom began because of Constantine, right? And he had this vision, right? He had a vision of a cross in the sky, but the cross wasn't just a cross, a wooden cross, the old rugged cross. It was a sword. And his vision was, and his words were, conquer by this. That became the master narrative of Christendom. And as we now kind of talk about being post-Christendom, which really is probably like being pre-Christendom, we need to think about what Christendom really communicated, because I think we were so immersed in it. We were powerful. We had influence. We had money. We were the what was happening now. And so let's think about what that master narrative said. Conquer by this. What kind of power it lifted up. And so in essence, he says, what if Constantine had seen a bowl and basin and said, serve by this? What if he'd seen a field of flowers and said, trust by this? What if he'd seen the cup and the bread and said, reconcile by this? What if he'd seen the outstretched arms of Jesus and said, embrace like this? So if we're no longer Christendom, let's let go of some of that master narrative. And let's embrace the master narrative of resurrection, of good news, of being the Easter people, of being the people of the third day. That's our story. So we need to think about what the master story is that we keep telling ourselves. You know, in AA, I think they talk about stinking thinking. Stinking thinking is when, you know, woe's me, poor me, I'm going to go eat worms, you know, in the garden kind of thinking. Well, go ahead. Because we live out our master narrative. It is our destiny. We can't help it. It's our script. So what's your story? What's your master narrative? So there's this church in Minnesota, and they said they were going to close. They still had like 50, 60 people. In my book, really? They had a great building. So they said, you know, can you come for our closing? I go to their closing. And in the worship service, they have people talk from the community, which was interesting. And they essentially were giving their building over to the school across the street. It was a little bit more complicated than that, but that's good enough. And so the head of the schools came over and said, you have always been a partner with our schools. You have done so much with the schools over the years, and thank you for this wonderful gift. And then the person who was in charge of their food pantry, which was, you know, far more than a food pantry, but really helped people in need, he stood up and he said, you know, when the stockyards went down in South St. Paul, you were the ones who started this, and now it's evolved into this. Thank you very much for all that you have done. And then some other people came and gave the same thing. And after the worship service was over, the lay leader came up to me and he said, you know, if we'd have been telling that story.
Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am.
Because their story was, the annual conference has never done anything for us. We never had a single good pastor all the years of our existence. And, you know, right. So what story are you going to tell yourself? Because I'm here to tell you, we live out our master narrative. What's your story? So, you know, I've been paying attention to the metaphors that people use about the church. About Christendom, but Christianity itself, because we can't just be in this for United Methodist's sake.
Amen.
We got to raise everybody's boat, you know what I mean? Christianity's taken a hit, and partly we're to blame, so we need to also be a part of the solution.
That's right.
So You know, we need to be careful about our metaphors and our master narratives to raise the awareness of the best of Christianity and the best of United Methodism and the best of our annual conferences and the best of our local churches. So I have this little book in my purse, and I write down the metaphors that I hear people use about the church. So I've just been keeping a list. So this is my latest metaphor that I'm working on. And I think this is kind of my master narrative for now. You can ask me tomorrow, it might change. And that is, we're under construction. I know that's just a little bit, it's an old image. But I-90 between here and Rockford is under construction until 2016. Now, my guess is, you don't even have to know about I-90. There's some major road in your community that's under construction until Jesus comes. Okay, is there anybody not with me on this image? All right? So I drive I-90, I work the image when I'm out there, and kind of keeps me patient. And, you know, to be under construction means there's a lot of deconstruction going on. There's a lot of demolition. There are these big earth movers that are digging things up and plowing them where the road beds used to go and taking down bridges and you know, rearranging the lanes, and there's signs that say, stay in your lane, and there's a lot of frustration as you go, and you're supposed to go 45 miles an hour, and usually people are going 65 or 70, and so it actually feels dangerous to me. And if you go at night when it's raining, and the lanes change, and they're different from the last time you were there, it's quite an experience. I was out there in June on a Sunday morning at 7 a.m., almost to Rockford, sitting in traffic, not moving, in the middle of the countryside for 15 minutes. Now, I had given myself plenty of time to get where I was going, but when you're just sitting in the countryside 15 minutes, you begin to panic. Has anybody panicked about the church lately? Does anybody else feel frustrated at times? Do you sense the deconstruction and the demolition? Do you sometimes feel that the bridges have gone down that you relied upon? Do you feel like there's earth movers going through where you thought you had plowed the ground, and now you're under deconstruction? Anybody with me here? Are we talking about I-90? Are we talking about the church? But, see, you know, people say, well, Sally, you just can't be Pollyanna with the best metaphor in town. See, that's what I like about this metaphor. It's frustrating. It's dangerous. It's dirty. It's messy. It's confusing. It's aggravating. All those things. But underneath it,
but
yes, ma'am.
There's hope.
Hope.
There's hope that I-90 is going to be better. No, really, you're going through all this deconstruction and reconstruction because there's hope the church will be better.
Yes.
That's my story. And I'm sticking to it.